Hello everyone and welcome to Ask Margot Today. Our plan is to answer your questions, the sticky questions of life that can keep us feeling stuck, feeling small or feeling sick. I'm Margot Coatsworth and welcome to our show today. I was talking to a woman, Talia, the other day, who said she had a really big issue in her life and she wasn't sure she was ready to put it into words, but she did want to talk about it. I said to her, well, I think it can only be one of three things. One is money or business success, which usually relates to money. Two is health, and three is relationships. I've thought quite a bit about this and wondered if I've missed something, but I don't think so. I think the things that really upset us in life fit into one of these three categories: money, health, or relationships. If you know someone who's feeling desperate about life, have a think about those three areas on their behalf and see which one you think the problem could be in. We never want to see somebody flailing and unable to find a way to help themselves, but sometimes it can be hard to know what you can do to support somebody. Checking in, telling them you're there for them, offering them whatever kind of support they need is important. I always think we must try and live life without regret. If you can say something helpful, kind, supportive to someone, say it, because sometimes you don't get a second chance to do those things, and nobody wants to live with regret like that. I know that Tony Robbins has a group of things he talks about, like human needs, and he has more than three. He has six. He calls these the universal drivers of all human behaviour. This is different from what I was identifying as the things that we can feel desperate about and that can cause the most anguish in our lives. Tony's are: one, certainty, the need for safety, stability, comfort, and predictability. Two is variety or uncertainty. It seems a contradiction, but we have a need for change, for novelty, for surprise, and new stimuli. Number three is significance, the need to feel important, unique, worthy of attention, or special. We all need that. Number four is love and connection, the need for closeness, union, community, and belonging. Number five he identifies as growth, the need to expand one's capacity to learn and develop. And number six, contribution, the need to give, serve, and help beyond oneself. Tony often explains that the first four needs, certainty, variety, significance, and love or connection, are personality needs. And the last two, growth and contribution, are what he calls spiritual needs. And he teaches that true fulfillment comes when all of these needs are met consistently. I often talk about the metaphysical, which is not a term that's part of our language very much. We talk about meditation now. We never used to do that in the mainstream. It was always a little bit fringe. Now we talk about the universe, which would also once upon a time be considered quite out there. We use terms like mindset and well-being that we've come to accept as part of our mainstream daily language and our philosophy. We talk about the law of attraction. I don't know if we would be doing that quite so much if Rhonda Byrne hadn't written The Secret. Well, I'd like to propose we include metaphysical into our everyday terminology. I tend to avoid using words like spiritual because I think that's loaded for many people. They think it's airy-fairy. I'll often use our essence as a term instead because no one's going to deny they have essence, but they might deny that they're a spiritual person. But I do love the word metaphysical. I once found the most wonderful definition for it that just absolutely nailed it. But today I thought I'd have a look a bit further to see what I could find. So here's the classical definition of metaphysical from Aristotle. It's beyond the physical, the study of being, substance, cause, and reality itself. A philosophical dictionary definition would be concerned with the first principles of things including concepts such as being, knowing, identity, time, and space. Maybe a modern, more accessible definition would be what the Cambridge Dictionary says, relating to the part of philosophy that is about understanding existence and knowledge. A spiritual or transformational definition would be metaphysical refers to what is beyond the physical eye, the unseen reality that shapes the seen. Or, as some people say, thoughts become things. That which deals with the ultimate causes and underlying principles of existence beyond material appearance. The exploration of consciousness, essence, and being, how thought, belief, and imagination shape reality. In thinking about our human needs, of course, I thought about Maslow's hierarchy of human needs that we all seem to accept. I don't know that I've ever heard anyone question it. It is, one, our physiological needs. That's the base of his pyramid. That's food, water, air, shelter, sleep, clothing, that kind of thing. These must be met for survival, he says, first. Number two is safety, personal security, health, a stable job, income, property, law and order. Interesting. Once these basics are covered, people seek stability and protection. So that's the second level. The third level is love and belonging, friendship, intimacy, family, community and connection. Because we need to feel we belong and are accepted. His fourth tier, getting towards the top of this pyramid, is esteem, respect, status, recognition, self-confidence, achievement. Both self-esteem and esteem from others matter to us. And his fifth one, which is the top of his pyramid, is self-actualization, becoming the most you can be. Creativity, growth, meaning, purpose, living in alignment with your full potential. Apparently, later on, Maslow expanded this further, and he talked about a sixth level, self-transcendence, which is going beyond self, serving others, connecting with something larger, spiritually, altruism, legacy. I did think how sad it is that helping others is an afterthought right at the top, or right at the bottom of this list in a way. Isn't it a shame that it's our last place, but not for everyone, thankfully? It's just a little bit of food for thought. What if the food pyramid that some say should now be turned on its head was the same with Maslow's pyramid? Perhaps, I'm not denying, of course, that we have to eat and have a place to sleep and that kind of thing. But I do often think we have our priorities wrong, upside down, or in the wrong order. It's so important for us to think for ourselves and not to just accept what we've been told, because life is not a complete picture at any one time. One person doesn't know everything. Even everybody doesn't know everything until we discover the next thing. We are designed to ask questions, to follow leads, and to grow and discover things that we didn't know, things that make more sense and work better. Medicine is a prime example of this. All those scientists out there doing research and development, asking questions and looking for better answers are a perfect example of why we're able to make improvements in our lives and do things better if we query things. Well, that was quite heavy duty, wasn't it? Our next question is from Tina. She wants to know why she seems to end up with men who act, she says, like babies sometimes, in terms of their emotional response. I don't usually talk much about emotional intelligence, but perhaps I should, because I see a very low level of it quite often. You'll know, anybody else who's listening today, that, like Tina, if you challenge someone sometimes or question them, their first response can be to kick back and say, well, you do that too. Or they might say, what about you when you did da-da-da-da-da? You know what I mean? People who can't stay on track and address the thing that they're being asked about because they just want to deflect and deflect away from them. That's called a low emotional quotient. God didn't give them that. They did it themselves. If you haven't taken someone on for life and they behave like this, don't pick them, because it means into the future you're going to have to tiptoe around things that need to be addressed because they can't behave in a mature fashion to talk them through. I find the best way to deal with a person like this, Tina, is to say, I've brought up this subject, so let's stick to this particular subject. And if you have another issue you would like to talk to me about, you may certainly bring that up at another time on your own initiative. Just pull them back to the point you have brought up. Remember to always keep your conversation polite. No little digs, no reminders of the things they've done wrong and that have nothing to do or that have nothing to do with the issue you're trying to address. Keep your voice even. Don't let it get high and don't let it get loud. Keep it low and measured. If people start to lose their cool or say silly things, you've got to leave them out there by themselves doing that. Don't join them. Pull them back gently to your level of measured, logical conversation. And if you're not having much luck, then sum it up, if you can, in one sentence. Just what you want to say, and then say to them, I'll leave that thought with you, if I may, for you to have a think about, and perhaps we can pick this up again at a later date. So if you feel like you're not making progress, step back and address it again later. Often people need time to think about things and consider them. I'd like to say that people can grow in emotional intelligence. That would be great, wouldn't it? I'm not sure that you can change the nature of a person, but you can certainly grow in awareness. They can, and you can, with deliberate intention to do better and be more emotionally mature. But Tina, if you can pick somebody, if you're at that stage of your life, who acts in a mature way, who isn't instantly reactive, and can consider another point of view, who's prepared to investigate if something is out of balance with a view to pulling it back, then pick that person because they'll make the best kind of mate for life. I hope that helps. Last episode, we had a question about how to keep a man. This time, we have a question from Tim about how to keep a woman. This is going to be a tiny answer, Tim, and it comes from a man, not from me at all. His name is Alex Hormozy, and he is a power businessman. And he's absolutely besotted with his wife and devoted to her. They're probably the most overt example of a team that I've seen in quite a while. It's interesting that he gives not only very gritty, no-nonsense business advice, but he also gives marriage and relationship advice. So Alex says the best dating tip for younger guys is get better. That's it, he says. You can toss everything else out the window, and instead of learning ways to deceive and posture, just be the real thing and you'll get whoever you want. Well, I quite like that, and I usually give a list of various things to check off, but today I'm just going to leave it at that one and let it sit there. As a single dating tip for men, just get better. Here's a little snippet on this subject that I came across recently that has echoes of this emotional maturity subject. If a woman behaves like a girl in a relationship, it means she's with a man. If she acts like a mother, she's with a boy. A generalization, of course. But you might put it another way. If a woman feels she can relax with a man enough to feel like a girl, it means she feels safe and secure with that man. If, on the other hand, she has to take responsibility and carry the load, she will have to switch into mother mode. Food for thought. Talia has a question today. She said she met a lovely man and she thinks he might be the one, but she wants to make sure she gets it right this time and is feeling very nervous about possibly botching it. She wants to be her best self and she wants to make her best efforts to treat him like the man she thinks he's going to be in her life. She would like to set things up from the beginning to work beautifully and want some guidance to do so. It's a great intention, Talia. If I had to say just one thing, it would be say every day, just to yourself or maybe to him, what can I do to make you happy today? And with a bit of luck, he'll say that same thing to you. I think that could be a single recipe for success. Of course, there are so many things I could say, but I'm going to give you some tips I've come across recently and have proven to be successful in maintaining relationships for people on a long-term basis. One is to date each other forever, because you're married or together for a long time doesn't mean you have to stop going on dates. Or that really is code for taking time together. Number two, when you're hurt, say so gently instead of attacking. That's great advice. Number three, always keep your phones away during quality time. Number four, learn each other's love languages fluently and then use them. Number five, never use silence as a punishment or turn into a frosty girl. Number six, create traditions that are just yours. Number seven, compliment each other more than you criticize and never criticize in public. Just don't ever do that. Number eight, handle each other's vulnerabilities with care. That's a really important one. Number nine, when you come across a problem, fight the problem, not each other. 10. Make physical connection daily, even if it's just holding hands. 11. Remember why you chose them when times get tough. Grow together so you don't grow apart. And just one more for fun from me, and that is kiss like you mean it. Ban a peck on the cheek out of your lives altogether. That's for children, for aunts, and for grandmothers. Make every kiss count, either by making eye contact or taking an extra second or two or three to add a heartfelt hug or whisper a zhushy comment. We love to feel that we are the only ones in the world for that other person of ours. If you make this new man feel like that, Talia, and of course if he makes you feel like that, you'll have a great opportunity to create a happy ever after scenario for both of you. I remember saying to someone once, I know so much now, I'd make the most fantastic wife. But I realised that we are only that if the other person pulls that out of us. We require inspiration to be a fabulous life partner. And of course, we have to be that inspiration for the other person. There's no such thing as a passive relationship. Relationships never stand still. They go forward, or what's that other word? They atrophy. I looked that one up. It means to waste away, weaken, or decline through lack of use or movement. As my children say, ain't nobody got time for that. So be fabulous to get fabulous. You could always share your to-do list like this with this man at the right time, or pin it up somewhere so he knows your intention, and he may well add this to his intention as well. Try that and let me know how you go. My life platform is really that we have the power to be the genie in our lives, and that enormous power is in the words we use. Last episode I talked about the power of command that we might have with the words we use. And I suppose I've had a bit of difficulty thinking that we might be commanding God. That did make me feel a bit uncomfortable. But I read something recently and it said, we're not commanding God, we are commanding law. And I have talked a lot about universal law or life laws, immutable laws that we all live by. Sometimes they are apparent and sometimes they are just working behind the scenes, creating what shows up in our lives and in our world. This is a constant question around me that comes up about how much power we actually have to create change, to turn bad things into better things, to pull good things out of, I was going to say a hat, but I don't mean a hat like a magic trick. I would normally say to pull good things out of the unseen, or to pull thoughts into things. Let's look at that part closely as our last question today, which is about the power of our spoken word. Some people say to me, they're just words, but I don't think so. An article I read recently was about a Japanese scientist, Dr. Masaru Emoto. He proved something extraordinary, that words change the world around you. He had students speak negative words like, I hate you and you're a failure, to one set of water bottles, and then treated another set with loving words like, I love you and thank you. And after freezing the water and viewing it under a microscope, the results were astonishing. The water exposed to negativity formed chaotic patterns. Meanwhile, the water blessed with positivity crystallized into harmonious shapes. A huge percentage, up to 70% of our body is water. That means every good word, if you extrapolate this whole concept, you speak, every good word you speak creates a ripple effect in your cells, shaping your energy, your health, and even your reality. I looked a bit deeper into this. This chap was a Japanese researcher and author who was born in 1943. He was known and is still known for his studies claiming that human thoughts, words, and intentions can influence the molecular structure of water. He exposed water samples to music and to intention and to words like love, gratitude, and other samples to the opposite, hate and you fool. Then he froze the water and looked at the crystals under a microscope. So some were beautiful and symmetrical, and others were distorted and fragmented. So famous examples might be love and gratitude produced elegant hexagonal-looking crystals, and you make me sick produce broken, chaotic ones. Water, he claims, responds to vibrational energy of our words, thoughts, and emotions. And because our body is mostly water, he suggests our health and consciousness are directly influenced by our language and environment. His books are Messages from Water and The Hidden Messages in Water. They became global bestsellers. The principle has been used to illustrate the power of words, gratitude, and positive intention. Mainstream scientists, just to keep the balance here, have criticized his studies for lacking rigorous controls and reproducibility. But the principle is powerful. Words and thoughts carry energy, and what we speak into ourselves and others shapes outcomes and our health. My brother actually once did an experiment with his children when they were small. They cut a tomato in half and they lavished love and poetry and happy words on one half of the tomato and put it in the area where they all were. So it had company and heard good things. And I think this was for a couple of weeks. The other half of the tomato, they did the opposite with. They said not nice things about it, and then they put it away where they never saw it and it never was a part of their environment. I saw this actually. I saw the result of this. And it's so interesting that the happy tomato was just kind of frozen in time. It hadn't deteriorated or gone rotten or broken down. I'm not saying it looked freshly cut, but it hadn't decayed. The other half had. I remember trying this experiment myself later on. I have to say, not successfully, but I'm tempted to try it again, because I do know this principle works in people. So why not in a tomato? I know there's another internationally known experiment that's been done with rice and without the need to be in the same geographical location. Now, you might think this is fuba-wuba, but isn't this the same principle as the one we employ when we pray for someone who's far away? If you're praying for those in the Middle East, for example, this is the same principle at work. Back to the water thing. As our bodies are mostly water, it responds visibly to language. Imagine the subtle but constant effect of the words and stories we infuse in ourselves every day. We literally carry the resonance of our vocabulary in ourselves. When you say, "I'm magnificent," "I'm worthy," or "I'm failing," "I'm worthless," you are speaking into the very structure of your being. Words crystallize into form. Beauty or distortion is not accidental. It's authored by us. Emoto's water is a picture of your own inner world. Words written on it become patterns lived through you. If you change the story, you change the structure of your life. This is kind of my platform, really, and I have a little free ebook which you're welcome to read. It's called Tell a Different Story, and it's about how to change your life by the words you use, the story you tell to yourself and about yourself. It's available on my website under Change for Good. I would love it if everybody listening today would go and read that book. It's tiny and short, but I think it's very powerful, and it's a message we really need to hear. If we don't like what's showing up in our lives, we need to change our story, because the story must change before the outcome does. It's not the other way around, as we've all been led to believe. Remember, no one but you is the genie in your life. So if you have questions, don't forget to send them in to us at admin@coastaccessradio.org.nz or to me, probably easier, under the contact tab at margounlimited.com, Margo with a T. Thank you for your fine company today, and I hope there have been some answers and thoughts amongst all of our questions today that might spark a new way forward for you if you've been wondering how to solve something in your own life. Don't forget, there are free resources on my website and a quiz you can take to see where there might be gaps you'd like to put some energy into your life. And there are free hypnotic audios that can help you around things like health, youthfulness, sleep, imposter syndrome, feeling overwhelmed, and memory and recall. To finish today, as usual, we have the word, which is our message from the universe for today. Here we go. There will always be questions, big and small. You will always want to know what it is that you should do, say, or see, or how you should act in the multitude of options that lie before you every day. There is a foundation which you may stand upon and that will give you confidence and assurance as you move through each day. This foundation is that you are a limitless being. You are designed to play and enjoy life. You are designed to fly, not crawl. You are designed to be like me. You are not designed to struggle under the weight of a burden that is not even yours to carry. Do not carry burdens, perceived or real. It is not your job. It is not even your business, not for you and not for another on their behalf. Let that task go and life will be as it was designed to be, a pleasure and a joy. Thank you and see you next episode.
This program was made with assistance from New Zealand On Air for radio broadcast and through the accessmedia.nz website. Thank you, New Zealand On Air.